This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to Shoot the Defense on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined by a very special guest this evening. It's none other than Technical Director at the FNSW. It is Warren Grieve. Welcome to the show, mate. How you doing?
Great. Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, it's an absolute pleasure having you on the show, mate. Absolute pleasure. Now, I recognise that accent. It's not Australian.
No, it certainly isn't.
Am I right in saying that you're from the UK, or should I say Stevenage?
Yeah, I'm from Stevenage. I was actually born in Newcastle upon Tyne, moved down to Stevenage when I was 9, and lost my accent within 18 months. So I'm the black sheep of the family.
Well, mate, that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know. I know you you went to Australia back in, was it 2008? Am I right? Because you had a knee injury, and is that what happened? You decided to take your career a different path.
Yeah, that's correct. I was actually working at Stevenage at the time, and I'd had to have a knee reconstruction, so I was out of work, and decided to take a bit of time off. And I have family that live over in Perth, Western Australia, and that no one's ever visited them before, so I took it as an opportunity to go out to Australia and just take a bit of R&R and never look back, to be honest with you.
Oh, fair enough. So how did your coaching career start then? Because as I understand, you spoke to a gentleman called Mark Liu who kind of helped you out and got you into the technical director role.
Yeah, not so much the technical director role, but I think my journey started way before heading over to Australia. It actually started at Stevenage Football Club, believe it or not, and I was released by them at a tender age of 20. During that time, I then went into playing to lower leagues, and I met a few friends who I was playing football with, who gave me the opportunity to go out to America, and I did a bit of grassroots coaching over there. And where I didn't make it as a footballer and got released, obviously that was very, very hard to take, and I knew that I wanted to stay in football full time, so that was a fantastic opportunity. And I was on and off 5 years, going back and forth due to sort of like visa issues and stuff like that. And then I ended up coming back to Stevenage to visit family, and they just opened up a £2.2 million academy there at Stevenage, just up the road from the stadium. And Phil Wallace, the chairman, I met with him, and we had a quick coffee, and I ended up becoming the assistant manager of their academy there. I was there for almost 5 years just before having the knee reconstruction, which brought me to Australia. And once landing in Australia, it was incredible, really. I had no idea of the football landscape, what it was like, what the level was like, how much football was being played, etc. And just having a look around within WA, I was put in touch with both Perth Glory, who are in the A-League, and then the Federation there, which is Football West, of which Mark Lee actually worked for at the time. And he was also playing for Perth Glory then as well. He was big into sort of like the youth coaching, and he gave me a great insight to youth football in particular there in WA. And he hooked me in, and I just started to do a few ad hoc sessions with him, and then he introduced me to the then technical director of Football West, Andrew Patel. I sat down, had a coffee with him, and then within 12 weeks I was offered a 4-year sponsorship to stay in Australia. So it was quite bizarre and quite quick how things turned out, and but yeah, very, very fortunate, that's for sure.
Two conversations involving coffee. What was in those beans, mate? Because it got you far, didn't it?
That's exactly right. It's the best coffee in the world. That's all I'm
going to
say.
Great stuff. Well, look, you knew quite a lot about the UK and the grassroots level and coaching and whatnot. When you came to Australia, was it a big culture shock for you? Because as I understand, football's still a developing game out there.
Yeah, look, like I've been here for nearly 12 years now, and it's still evolving, it's still growing. It's made massive strides in the sort of short time that I've been here, but it certainly was a shock, and it wasn't a shock so much as what wasn't going on. It was more that was going on, what was bubbling underneath, and there's been a real transformation. Depending on who you speak to in Australia, we're potentially stagnating, but I think at the levels that I've worked at and been fortunate in the environments that I've been in, we've made massive strides, and I'm sure that will kick on. We're now the number one participating sport here in Australia, with just over 1.1 million players playing around the country. But I think the biggest step for us now is that once we get those players, it's about retaining the players, because we're competing with so many different codes here. That was probably the biggest shock to me.
Okay, fair enough. But the thing is, I've spoken to people that have been involved in the game in Australia for a fair few years, and the kind of feedback I get is usually contradicts each other. You've got one side that says, oh, you know, the A-League clubs, they're so focused on bringing in big names, stellar names, and, you know, they don't really want to spend too much on youth development. But then you've got sides like Sydney FC, like Danny Townsend, who've been focused on bringing in younger players who've developed the likes of Alex Gersbach and whatnot. And, you know, it's kind of two different sides of the coin. What do you see going on in Australia at the moment? Is there a heavy focus on youth development, or is it more about a money ball effect, or maybe the Nike 40 like the Americans were doing?
Yeah, I having worked in America, I'll probably compare it to America, to be honest with you, in the fact that they started off exactly the same with the MLS, where it was very small, it was regional, etc., and then coming here to Australia, there has been that sort of shift. When I first arrived here, it was very much the responsibility of the federations, the Football West, the Football New South Wales, etc., to look after youth development. The A-Leagues were solely focused on just that first grade team, so the top tier team, and all their efforts, all their money went into that. There was a national youth league that sort of underpinned the A-League teams, and then they slowly moved that into a different space, whereby the structures changed slightly, and they're still changing even to this day. But what eventually has happened over time is that you have the A-League clubs now, which have academies starting to grow, that pretty much out of all of the A-League teams, is around about 7 or 8 that have now been granted with what's called a Tier 2 status here, whereby they're considered as academy, fully fledged academies, so quite similar to the UK in terms of being categorised depending on criteria where they sit, and then what that in turn has done is that's forced the A-League clubs to actually have a much bigger focus on youth development rather than just the senior side. So like I say, it's small stepping stones. Dollars and cents come into play as well, but the conversations I'm sure you will have had, that's happened over a probably extended period of time, and we're now starting to see a real shift, and then that'll now sort of like move into the next level, which is underneath, which is the National Premier League. It's underneath the A-League now, and FFA, I'm sure they're just going through a process now of announcing the new National Technical Director, and then they'll be pushing for the NPL clubs to actually have their own academies as well. So it's like I say, it's a long process, but there's definitely a process in place, and it doesn't happen overnight. So good things to come, I think.
Oh, absolutely, mate. And can you tell me about the national coaching courses? Because I know they're run at the AIS, which is the Australian Institute of Sport. Out here, there's a massive focus on safeguarding. Is there a similar sort of thing out there?
Yeah, it's all of the, again, coach development has probably been the biggest thing that's happened here over the sort of like 5 or 6 years. We were very fortunate to have a technical director by the name of Han Berger, who is from the Dutch FA, who came in and had a massive focus on coach education / coach development. At the time, it was seen that there's a need for coaches, and I mean the tagline is better coaches, better players. And to this day, that's still the tagline of FFA from the coach education point of view. The problem that we had here is, and going back again 5-6 years, was there wasn't that many coach educators to be able to coach the coaches.
Right.
So therefore, all of the courses, or the majority of the courses, should I say, were actually out of the Australian Institute of Sport in Canberra, in the ACT. But as time's gone on, and we've moved through a phase of developing more coach educators, the courses have now become decentralised, which has provided more opportunities to coaches in regional areas that actually want to go into coach education, and then getting, and furthermore, those sort of community coaches that want to step into more of the advanced pathway of youth development are now given the opportunity to have courses that are run on their doorstep as well. So there's a huge emphasis on coach development.
Oh, fantastic.
Providing opportunities for both coaches and furthermore for players as well.
That's brilliant, mate, because, I mean, as you're probably aware, you know, coaches in the UK, the opportunities they get to work within the game out here are few and far between, hence the reason why a lot of them ply their trade abroad. We've seen a lot go in the United States, in Australia, and especially in the Far East. Why do you think it's so difficult for British coaches to actually get jobs within the UK? It's a question I ask every coach that comes on, and I'm interested to hear your view on it.
Yeah, it's the classic saying, if you've been a good horse, you must be a good jockey.
Right.
And I stand by that only because I've lived and breathed it in the environments that I've been in. And I compare it to a conversation that I had back when I was at Stevenage. You can either be a youth coach or a senior coach, but you can't be both. You've never played the game. You're probably not going to get onto an A licence. You're only going to have to stick with your A for B and sort of like model your way through. And it was that sort of conversations that I would have, and that was only one of many conversations I had in the UK, but I think that that's given me the fire in the belly, and I'm sure that it would have given the same to many other coaches that may now be plying their trade overseas to say, well, you know what, I want to be involved in the game. Yeah, jobs are few and far between, but if I'm going to really make a push for it, I'm going to give myself the best opportunity to go and do that. And that's certainly something that I've had to do. It's no different here in Australia. The jobs, if they're few and far between in the UK, and that's the number one participated sport, it's the number one followed sport, then you come over here and the jobs are even more scarce. So you have to try and put yourself in a position whereby you get as many strings on the bow, so to speak, and give yourself the best opportunity. If you want to be involved in football, that you're going to have to start from the bottom. It's not just going to happen overnight. And I keep talking about process, but you have to have a process in place and understand the environment you're working in, where you're working. Certainly in Australia, in regional areas, the states are very different. So one size doesn't fit all. So it's not just in the UK where jobs are scarce. It's exactly the same here in Australia.
You kind of answered my next question, because, you know, you mentioned before how, you know, people were saying, oh, you didn't play at the highest level, so it'd be difficult for you to get into coaching and get a full-time role. I look at the names of the Australian coaches out there, like Tony Popovich and, you know, Aurelio Vidmar, John Aloisi. These guys have all played at the highest level. Well, I'm sure you've got some peers who haven't played at the highest level, or possibly they've just represented the semi-pro level and they're struggling to get into the game because of these names.
Yeah. I mean, the two names that you just mentioned there weren't only just fantastic players, but also fantastic coaches, and have gone through the same process. So I think we need to, certainly from my point of view as well, it's not to say that just because you've played that you can't be a good coach either. But certainly, I think it gives you a leg up if you have played. And here in Australia, I would be inclined to say if you have played the game, A-League, or you've played overseas and then you come back and you've gone through your coaching badges, you'll definitely get elevated into a position or be looked at more seriously than a coach who possibly hasn't played the game. And I think that's just a stigma that we currently have here. But again, through coach education and coach development and education of boards and CEOs and general managers, again, that's a thing that will happen over time, and that there's good coaches that will break through, I'm sure. I mean, there's a fantastic coach who's just got an opportunity right now, Darren Davies, because John Aloisi stepped aside from Brisbane Roar. But having said that, Brisbane Roar were 2-0 up last night at half time, and you think he's rubbing his hands together. And then it's half time, sort of like speaking to the journo, he said it's only one half, and then he's up against Perth Glory, who are top of the league, and they come off the pitch and they lose 4-2. So then straight away, it's one of those ones. Then do they look at that? Oh, we need somebody with more experience, etc. So it's even though there's no promotion and relegation here in the A League, again, if someone does get the opportunity, the powers that be higher above don't necessarily give you the time that you necessarily need to put your stamp on and your mark on how you actually want the team to play as a collective and buy into the vision and philosophy, I guess.
The powers that be, that term, I've heard it time and time again. You know, it's always a stumbling block when it comes to the hierarchy, isn't it? You know, people like to stamp their authority and say, this is our way of doing it. And speaking of our way, is there like an Australian way of coaching? Because, you know, we've heard in the past, so I'm not going to mention any names, about how certain coaches in the UK get selected because of who they are, because of the way that they play. Is there something like that out there? And what is involved in this whole coach educator thing, as you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, it's there certainly is. We started on that journey of implementing a DNA, if you will, and much similar to the UK and the FA, an Australian way of playing, an Australian brand of football. It very much got labelled the Dutch way, or the last technical director in Eric Abrams was Belgium, and looking at what they did there, etc. But there was a huge emphasis from Football Federation Australia to actually have a national identity, a way that we actually want to play, and whether that be from the discovery phase from 5 to 9, moving into the performance phase from 17 into seniors. They went to the four corners of the earth and did their research, and they sent out some very knowledgeable coaches and coach educators at the time to gather as much information as possible and say, you know, well, what's happening? What's the current trends around the world? What is deemed as best practice? And then what can we take from each of those corners of the earth and then bring it back to Australia and then try and bring it to life? And then Hahnberg at the time then released the first sort of curriculum, if you will, was around about 2009, and then that was just a sort of like a small pamphlet, so to speak, so it had no sort of like meat around the bones. And then it was seen as, well, we need some more. So then they 2010 they introduced what was called the building blocks, and the building blocks being the discovery phase of 5 to 9, the skill acquisition phase sort of like 10 through to the under 13s, then going into the game training phase. You then went into 13s to 17s, and then 17s to seniors was the performance phase. So those were seen as the stages of development, and then you had to work within each of those stages to give the players the tools best possible, depending on where they were at in their journey. Again, that was still seen as not enough. What do we need to coach within each of those stages? We need to be a little bit more explicit as to what does a coach need, depending on what age group they're actually coaching in. Come 2012, just before Hahnberger left, his lasting legacy was the national curriculum of Australia, and whereby it's a fantastic document. I think the rollout of that hit a stumbling block, certainly once he had moved on. And I would have loved to have seen him stay for another few years to really bed that down. So again, with Australia being the size that it is, getting the information out, educating everyone at all levels to understand what the curriculum was about. It's not just the 1-4-3-3 from Holland or Belgium, etc., etc. It is much deeper than that, and it is just the foundation, and it will evolve, and it is evolving, and it will continue to evolve. But there's certainly through the coach development programs that we have in place, the C licence, the B licence, A licence, there's a huge emphasis on the Australian way of playing. FFA have done a fantastic job of engaging the national teams into coaching courses as well. Graeme Arnold, only just before Christmas, who's now the Socceroos coach, put on a few sessions and opened it up with Rene Mjolnsson, who's his assistant as well, formerly of Manchester United, Sir Alex Ferguson. And they're embracing what it means here in Australia to improve our level of coaching, to then, as I said before, improve the quality of player within the Australian system and giving Australian players a much better chance at every level. And that's not just on the men's side, that's on the female side as well with the Matildas, and working more in unison and less in silos, if you will.
That's quite interesting, man. And it's even more interesting that you mentioned the curriculum earlier, because I know you've got the role as the technical director of the Football New South Wales, but do you have any input in, I don't know, amending this curriculum? Will they give you an opportunity to have your say in if any changes need to be made in the future?
Yeah, again, it's without actually having an actual national technical director right now, they're actually going through that process. It's been a bit of a drawn out process because currently where we sit, FFA feel, and I 100% agree, that it needs to be the right decision this time round. We need to make sure that we get whoever comes in now has a real understanding of what the landscape of Australia is, what the needs and wants depending on the different pockets of Australia are, whether there is a regional area or a metropolitan area. There's a lot of work to be done. And what the coach development department at Football Federation of Australia have done, have always lent on the technical directors within the federation. So myself as technical director for Football New South Wales, there's another one of me that's in WA, there's another one of me in South Australia, another one of me in Queensland, etc., etc. They had for a fair few years, it hadn't happened for 2 years until just November just passed, what was called the National Technical Network, where they would bring in not just the technical directors, but they would also bring in coaches from the A-League, coaches from the national team staff, both male and female, and then they would also bring in coaches from the local leagues, and they would basically go through a whole week of what is in the best interest of football moving forward at each of the levels, and then how do we actually evolve that? That stopped, and again, as and why that is, that's not for me to say. I'm not entirely sure. As I mentioned before, dollars and cents always comes into play, so that might be one thing. But certainly coming into Football New South Wales as the technical director and working with the head of football there as well, we saw it as a huge opportunity to offer our facilities and our space in Sydney to FFA, where we could actually bring a group of people together and have that very conversation with the question that you just asked. How do we actually evolve our curriculum now? How do we move it forward? And how do we move it forward, not just as a paper document, but move it forward from a coach development point of view? Is there things within the current curriculum that we need to now move on? Does it stand out? And then bringing that sort of like brains trust, if you will, together. But collaboration more than anything else, not just one person saying, right, this is the way that I think it should be, but actually getting in a room with like-minded people and saying what's going to be in the best interest of football moving forward for Australia.
Sounds very interesting, mate. Sounds very interesting. Now, I know that you've done a few YouTube videos based on a few coaching sessions and whatnot. I know the FA have done their own initiatives online. Do you think the Australian FA will be doing something like that in the future? Because obviously, you know, social media is such a massive tool to get that branding out, to get the word out, so to speak. Is that something that they should be looking into to kind of coax more youngsters in? Because, you know, it's a small football community, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. I wasn't laughing just because I do YouTube movies. To be honest with you, I haven't done them for a while since I was in the ACT. But yeah, 100%, it's social media is key. You can't hide from it. And I think we need to embrace technology and use it to our advantage. And certainly within Australia, the landscape's so huge. If you look at Australia, it's its own continent, which is scary in itself. And to get out and around Australia is very, very difficult. But if we can bring some great coaches together from all different levels and start to actually shoot some movies, then I think that's going to be a fantastic tool to actually give coaches just another resource, another place to be able to go to find some sessions to lean on the internet and actually just pick up a few bits and pieces. And it's certainly something from a Football New South Wales point of view that we're currently going through, from both a sort of community level and also from an advanced point of view as well, and just trying to put together some short sort of 90 second videos where coaches can go to. They haven't got the time to be able to plan a full session, which may take 2.5 hours, but they can go to a video on their phone and then have a look how to actually set up a practice, put a practice on, and then looking for what the key outcomes of that practice should be in order for the players to come off the pitch, one, and first and foremost enjoying it, but two, taking something out of it as well.
Well, this is it. I know, you know, money in grassroots is you know, scarce, so to speak. You know, we always hear about pitches, you know, and facilities not having enough money pumped into them. And I think that the way people should look at it is that social media should be used to their benefit. It's quite a cheap tool to use if you know how it's done, so to speak. And as you mentioned, if you can put on a few programs, maybe like a 10-minute video or maybe an online Q&A session with coaches from around the world, I'm pretty sure you could get more people involved with the way that you can interact with people online these days. You don't actually have to physically be there. Granted, it's worthwhile being there to watch how a session is done and to get involved. But at the same time, if you could do, say, a live stream of a coaching session and take Q&As through YouTube or maybe through, I don't know, any other platform, it could open up more opportunities, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You have FFA have just engaged the Player Development Project, and they're working together to actually roll out videos which are coming out on a weekly basis from FFA now. And it's something, again, it's one of those things where we're not naive in the fact that we know that there's a need for it and a want for it. Again, it comes down to how it's done. And having that process behind it of how it should be rolled out, and not sort of muddying the waters as well, because like I said before earlier on, we want to try to establish our own DNA, our own way, and make sure that the messages are consistent that come out. So it's not just going to be any old random practices that are put up. It's actually there's been that collaboration. We've worked together to ensure that the right messages are being delivered. There's a consistency around everything that we do. To ensure that we give ourselves the best leg up when it comes to youth development and coach development. But it's a huge tool and something that we'll certainly be using. And I compare it to here at Football New South Wales. I talk about Australia being its own continent. Here in New South Wales alone, we register just shy of 295,000 players, of which only just over 19,000 coaches. So that in itself says a lot. It's the ratio is extreme, and then also you look at it certainly within New South Wales, probably around about 95-96% is all grassroots. So that's just your mums, your dads, your amateurs that are just looking for a kick around, that they want these resources, they're crying out for them. So it's certainly something that we need to do for sure.
Absolutely, mate. A couple of quick things before I let you go. Little Birdie tells me that you were kind of scouting for the Socceroos before the World Cup. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm extremely fortunate that through my own journey of delivering courses and being on courses with ex-Socceroos, you get to meet some fantastic people and get to be involved. And again, I mentioned earlier on with Graham Arnold and René Mielsen, where they open the door, they allow you to come in. Ange Postecoglou, the former Socceroos coach, who won the Asian Cup, and Pete Klimoski and Ante Milicic, who were there before. I worked fairly closely with them, and I had opportunities to go and scout for Australia. And again, that was just a great opportunity for my own professional development. And to work in that space, it was a great opportunity and thoroughly enjoyed it.
Fantastic. And I know that you did a bit of a session, or you watched the Football New South Wales Cerebral Palsy team. What's the attitude towards, people with disabilities playing football out there? Is there a lot of focus on that?
Yeah, absolutely. Football's for all. It's huge. Everyone loves the game. Everyone should have the opportunity to play the game. And we at Football New South Wales, at Football Federation Australia and around the country, have a huge emphasis on that. There's a lot that's happening at that level, not just with the cerebral palsy teams, but you've got the Pararoos who've done it extremely well. Wheelchair football, which is massive, fantastic initiative for wheelchair football, especially here within Football New South Wales. Walking football is now massive as well, so it doesn't matter how old you are, you can still be involved in the game, those fantastic initiatives only drive up the participation and keep everyone active and enjoying the game that we all love.
Absolutely, and I know that you did 16K, didn't you, in a marathon? How did that go?
I did the marathon after 16Ks. My hamstring went tight. The rest of the race with a semi-torn hamstring. So it was a challenge, mate. That was just for charity, a charity close and dear to my heart for brain cancer. We was fortunate enough to raise some funds and run around at a very, I say run around, walk around at a very, very slow pace and raise a few pennies for a very, very, very good cause.
Absolutely, absolutely. And on a final note, mate, I know that you've been doing this job for 6 months, I'd say, but what's your long-term goal? When you first came to Australia, was this your main target or did you have something bigger in mind?
I'll be completely honest with you. I've always wanted to be a head coach. I'm not backwards and coming forwards at saying that. I had the opportunity when I was at Manly United Football Club just before starting up with Football New South Wales to become not only the technical director there, but the head coach as well. And that was a fantastic opportunity, and I had a real thirst for it. But I think I said it before, is that you're just trying to put as many strings on the bow as possible, and football jobs are few and far between. And indirectly, I've ended up doing my career completely back to front, where I've become a technical director before actually doing the head coach, or being a player, being the head coach, etc., etc. But what it has done in turn is it's opened up doors and it's opened up opportunities, and I thoroughly enjoy and love the day-to-day of being a technical director. Every day is a different day. You're working with different stakeholders. It's given me huge opportunities, opened many doors, as I said before. And I see this as I really need, from a personal point of view, coach education and being a technical director has in turn made me a better coach. I firmly believe that. I've been exposed to environments that I probably wouldn't have been exposed to if I hadn't have been a coach developer or a coach educator, and the same with being a technical director. And I see that I probably need to do this for another 3 to 6 years to get a real understanding, because it's not just about what happens on the pitch, it's about what happens off the pitch as well. Manage self, manage others. On the pitch is only 10-15%. The rest of the time it's managing everything else, and the technical director role really gives me an opportunity to hone that, learn it, give myself an understanding at each of the levels, whether it be at board level, whether it be down on the pitch, grassroots level with the mums and dads, etc. Bigger picture, this is the longest answer you've ever gotten, I'm sure. But bigger picture, I'd love to win a World Cup. That wow. would be my bigger picture.
No way, listen, aim high, as they say, aim high.
So, yeah, absolutely. If you don't aim high, don't bother aiming at all.
Super. Well, mate, on that note, thank you ever so much for coming on the show. I really wish you luck for your new role. It seems like a very exciting opportunity, and hopefully we'll see you donning a head coach jacket sometime soon, you know?
Beautiful. Thank you very much for the time. Really appreciate it.
No problem, mate. Just promise me you won't have a brolly.
I'll never be a Wally with a brother.
Super. Well, Warren, before I let you go, do you have a Twitter handle, any kind of social media where people can get in touch with you for any questions? A Facebook like page or something like that?
Yeah, on Facebook, Instagram, Wazzaji79 on Instagram, and on LinkedIn as well. You'll find me on LinkedIn, no problems at all, under just my regular name. So that they're the two main ones. I'm not really a one with Twitter. Instagram's usually my go-to for all of my social media and Facebook as well.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, guys, that was Warren Grieve. Warren, thank you ever so much for your time, mate. And yeah, anyone that's still listening, give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. And if you fancy a flyer, visit stealthsecretsource.co.uk for your betting tips. So until next time, guys, take care.